A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another episode of Why Would You Tell Me That with me, Neil Delamere, and him, Dave Moore. We are proudly part of the Acast Creator Network. And Dave coined a phrase some time ago, this is the show that is about stories that you don't know and facts and trivia that you don't know, but you probably should. It is his turn to wow us this week with something that's going to blow my mind. David, what have you got?
Yeah, I'm going to introduce you to a man called Paul Watson in part two. And Paul Watson is a journalist. He's also... he's such a football maverick, Neil, okay? I'm going to let him explain all of the stories in part two because he has so many. In fact, I think there's a good chance one of the key stories of his life we won't have time for and we'll have to do another episode in the future. And that's to do with Mongolian football, okay? Because okay, we're going to focus instead on football in the worst countries in the world. I don't mean countries to visit. I don't mean countries with poverty. I mean just the worst footballing countries in the world. He wants to organize a tournament with all of them. He wants to tell you why. It would be absolutely amazing. He is so passionate about it. This is a genius story. A man who acted on utter impulse, and it's just brilliant.
This is a man who has a story about Mongolian football, and we're not even covering that yet.
Probably not.
Okay, that's quality.
I'd be surprised if we had time for that, given the amount of stuff he has about the other football we're going to talk about. Anyway, we'll get to that.
Amazing.
In part one, I did want to bring you something very much related to that. Okay, so okay. I was thinking about football, and I realized there's lots of people maybe listening who don't care about football. So I figured I can't, you know, bring you stories that are wild about football in a traditional sense. I need to bring you stories that are wild about football in a way that appeals to everybody, okay? So we're going to kick off with a match played between Arsenal and Dinamo Moscow, Dinamo Moskva, in 1945. Okay, so the Second World War has just ended, probably one of the first matches back after a long time. And it was actually played in Tottenham's White Hart Lane Stadium, which for anyone who does know about football will find that quite strange that Arsenal playing their home games there. But again, stadiums were bombed during the war. You had to use different places. So, in this game, there was a decision by the both teams and their management and presumably some form of UEFA who would have been there to call the game off because it was particularly dense fog. And the referee said, no, we're playing the match.
All right, okay.
Now, I presume he wanted his 2 shillings and 6 that he was going to get for refereeing the game.
Yeah.
But the fog was so thick that it was, I mean, it was farcical. Nobody in the crowd could see anything. The players couldn't see. And so what happened was they all immediately fell into cheating. Okay? So
yeah,
because you couldn't see, Moscow made a substitution, put up the board or helped the thing, whatever, and said, yeah, you go on. Except you couldn't see, so they just left the other lad on. At one point, it is believed, at one point, there were 15 Russians playing on an 11-a-side game.
Yeah, all Arsenal, of them for Arsenal.
Arsenal did also have a little way of getting back at them. One of their players was sent off, and he did leave the pitch in an orderly fashion in exactly the way he was supposed to. But at some point, he just snuck back on because nobody could see whether he was there or not. And he just snuck back onto the pitch and played the rest of the game. And unfortunately for Arsenal, their goalkeeper had to be replaced because he ran into the goalpost because he couldn't see it and knocked himself out. Now, you may remember, in those kind of eras, there weren't that many substitutes, and there certainly wasn't a goalkeeper substitute.
Yeah.
So a fan had to come on, take his place in goals, and the match continued and was finished, and they played the game out. Literally the most insane weather-related football that I've ever heard.
So you can't, like, the goalkeeper not to see the post, it's a matter of feet away from you, and he runs straight into it.
What was the score? Arsenal actually lost. It was 4-3 to Dynamo Moscow. They went through, unfortunately, in the European competition.
Wow. Do you know when Arsene Wenger famously started to say that he couldn't, I didn't see it. So this is Arsenal lore. It's basically in their DNA from many, many years ago. That's insane.
It is. Do you know, Neil, which vegetable was banned or is currently still banned from Chelsea's football ground?
Oh, so many incorrect, politically incorrect jokes.
Please
there.
Don't. Please don't.
Tomatoes.
No.
No, it's a fruit, isn't it?
It is a fruit. I would give you the answer, but no, it's not.
Is it a lettuce?
No, it's not.
Because she was only prime minister for 44 days. Is it a turnip? I mean, a turnip.
Like, yeah, it would cause serious damage.
Proper heft in a fruit in a root vegetable.
That's true.
In a tuber as well,
it's,
maybe.
It's none of those.
Is it... give me a clue.
It is... I would use it in the basis of pretty much all sauce-based dishes that I would cook at home.
Pineapple.
And that's why Neil's cooking podcast has never taken off.
No, we're massive in Hawaii.
Okay, fair.
No, I don't know.
Celery.
Why is celery banned?
Celery, yeah. Celery has been banned for decades, apparently, because they have a celery chant in Chelsea. I don't actually know what the celery chant is. I believe it's not particularly nice.
Okay, I think I can understand why there's been a massive overspend at Chelsea.
Chelsea and Todd Bowley's reign.
So it's no, Todd. It's not a celery cap that you need.
We need a celery cap.
It's very close, but it's not a celery cap. But why are so they're banned just because of this phrase?
So they had this chant that includes the word celery. So for years they would bring celery and they would throw it onto the pitch.
Is it about David Ellery? He was a Chelsea fan, wasn't he?
He might have been.
He was.
So they banned it because it was the vegetable that kept coming in. And it's classed as a dangerous vegetable, okay? So it got to a point where in 2007 they had to issue this statement. Ready?
Yeah.
The throwing of anything at a football match, including celery, is a criminal offence for which you can be arrested and end up with a criminal record. In future, if anyone is found attempting to bring celery into Stamford Bridge, which is Chelsea's home ground, they could be refused entry and anyone caught throwing celery will face a ban. The statement then goes on to direct fans to a hotline they can call to report others seen carrying celery.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Have I told you about trying to get into Spurs Liverpool? And I just was in a Tesco before. I think it was a Tesco. And I needed something. I thought, I need something to eat. I don't want to eat something that's too bad for me. And I bought slices of an apple in a little plastic.
A little packet.
Bag.
Yeah,
that you give to a kid for their lunchbox.
Yeah.
And I was going in and they frisked me, right? And I was trying to explain to those lads that I normally go to GAA matches and you could bring a javelin. You could bring a javelin into Croke Park and they would go, what are you doing? And you'd be like, I was told it was cocktail sausages.
Big ones, huge ones.
I've got to use this bad boy. That's what I was told. So they find these little slices of apples on me and the guy goes, you can't bring it in. I was like, why? And he goes, well, an apple could be thrown at somebody. And I was like, that is not an apple. That is the constituent parts of the apple. What do you think I'm going to do? Smuggle them in individually and, like, you know, a sniper rifle in the films, like, reassemble them into an apple.
Yeah, yeah. And you can do it. You've practiced so much, you can do it with your eyes closed.
Yeah. Like the Marines. Yeah, you're blindfolded and somebody timed you reassembling a Granny Smith, right? And I was looking at you, man. Obviously, he's not responding to any sort of logic. Like, no one has ever thrown an apple on a pitch that I've seen.
No.
Even when... What was famously thrown at Luis Figo? Do you remember when he went
A pig's head.
A pig's head.
Yeah.
So even when they threw a pig's head, when the perfect accompaniment to that would have been an apple.
Apple, yeah.
Right? No one has thrown an apple. I couldn't believe they took it off me. It was just insanity. But obviously you can throw parts of an apple and you can throw parts of celery.
Yeah, so please don't bring celery to Stamford. I presume you can bring celery to any other football stadium, just not Stamford Bridge. Another game, Neil, that probably never should have happened was, like, matches don't get postponed very much anymore. You know, it's only if it clashes with something else or whatever, right? But bad weather in the 62-63 season saw an FA Cup game between Lincoln City and Coventry City postponed. It was originally due to happen on January 5th, 1963. Inclement weather, just said, look, let's not do it again. It was a few days' time, we'll reschedule. No, couldn't happen, called off again. And again. And again. It was called off, Neil, 15 times. Right? To the point where that round of the cup, right, from the first match being played in that round of the cup to the last match of that round of the cup being played was 66 days. 2 months.
No way.
Yeah. And you know what the score was when they eventually managed to play this game that had been postponed 15 times? Maybe it was the Lincoln City lads who wanted it postponed. They lost 5-1 on the 6th of March.
Ouch. I mean, 15 times. It's getting married to Henry VIII or something, isn't it? He's called it off again and again and again. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That must be a record, is it?
It has to be a record. It absolutely has to be. Now, the other day, it depends when you listen to this podcast, but in April 2024, a few weeks ago, Manchester United played Chelsea in the Premier League. It was a mad game.
Yeah, 4-3, wasn't it?
It was 4-3, but it was 3-2 to United in the 90-plus-9th minute.
Yeah.
And United somehow conspired in the 90-plus-10th and the 90-plus-11th minute to lose the game 4-3. And you feel for the Chelsea fans who justifiably at 90 and 8 minutes went, might as well go home, can't even throw celery at this lot.
All these apples and pears are wasted.
Yes. Well, at least three. So anyone who went home early missed the two late goals that Cole Palmer scored and gave his team 3 points against this insane 2023-24 Manchester United side. But you could kind of forgive them going, look, well, it was only, he was in extra time, you know, at a time. Like, surely to God, the game was over. How about this? In 57-58 in England, Huddersfield Town were playing second division football and they were playing Charlton.
Okay.
Right? So December 1957, Huddersfield and Charlton. Charlton reduced to 10 men after 27 minutes. Captain Derek Ulton was taken to hospital with a dislocated shoulder, not sent off. And at that point in football, you weren't allowed to make a sub. There was just 11 men, 1 to 11, and that was it. No subs.
Wow.
So, obviously, then Huddersfield had a one-man advantage. They took a 1-0 lead, and they built on their lead. They scored more goals, and it was 5-1, right, with 27 minutes remaining in a match.
Yeah.
Loads of Charlton fans went, we've got back from Huddersfield. We might as well head off now. We're 5-1 down.
Yeah.
Well, Johnny Summers and Johnny Ryan scored a goal apiece and brought it back to 5-3 in the second half.
Okay.
By the 78th minute, Summers had gotten his hat-trick. It was now 5-all. Okay?
Yeah.
So all the Charlton fans are going, oh my God, what's happening? Like, the ones who are left are going, this is incredible. 81st minute, it's 6-5.
No. Right? 11 goals.
Yeah. And what happened was, because Huddersfield were so far ahead, loads of their fans had gone home.
Right.
So basically, there's really only the diehards of both sides left in the stadium.
And it's 10 versus 11 as well. Right?
Yeah, it's 10 versus 11. It's It's 5-1 down. You've only got 10 men. There's 27 minutes left. Charlton fought their way back and actually won the game 7-6.
I assume at that point they take the goalkeeper out and he's just shot, is he? Is he just 1950s?
Let six goals in.
Card off him, and he was just never heard of again.
Probably true.
That is the most remarkable score in a football match ever, I'd say.
Yeah, it has to be, because like for it to be 5-1 with 27 minutes to go, to end up like so 5-1 in favour of Huddersfield.
Yeah.
Charlton to draw back to 5-5, then go 6-5 ahead, then Huddersfield to get 6-6, and then literally the last play of the game was a Charlton header in to make it 7-6.
At any point, you know, think, keep it tight for the next 5 minutes.
Have you seen Manchester United play football in added time? That is actually impossible for some teams. Right, we're going to go to food now in football, Neil. Okay. Food, all right?
Well, we've already been to salary, so I think...
You're right. Well, this is when we're going to go food for salary, not celery. There's a Romanian midfielder called Ion Radu, and in 1998, he was sold by second division Iul Petrosani, which is the name of the team, to Valsea, another team. And the transfer window was open. All sounds fairly normal.
I don't think you need to say that their team's there. I mean, how else could he have been sold? Were they individuals? He was owned by this man, and then he was bought by another man. And like, he was part of it. It was a criminal enterprise, and they own people in that particular
trafficking
town.
Trafficking, it happens, yes, all the time. Yeah.
It's a very specific part of the world. No, we assumed they were
two teams. Okay. Yeah, fair enough. So they sold the player from one team to the other in the transfer window. Mm. And everything seemed fine above board except for one thing.
Okay.
No money changed hands.
Okay.
Instead, what happened was Ion Radu was sold to Valsea for 500 kilos of pork.
Oh, 500 kilos of pork. That is what we describe in the business as a day of barbecue. You tend to feed the thousands when you do stuff like that.
I do. The whole of Port Marnock is welcome to come in. Yeah, absolutely.
500 kilos of pork.
It was about $2,000 worth. 2,000 euros worth.
I love the fact that you knew that I
had to look that up. I had to look it up.
Like that there's there's a guard on the news going, that pork has a street value of up to 2,000 euro. And we have confiscated such. That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But it's not the maddest pork football story I've got for you.
Okay.
Because it's staying in Romania again. I don't know why pork is so important in Romania, but...
Do you think there's a kind of negotiation thing there going, well, we think he's good, but give you 3 rashers and some Clonakilty black pudding for him. I think he's better than know. That.
Yeah, throw in some Denny sausages and we'll see how we go.
Well, he's gone to two. He's a goal-scoring Galti bonus if he scores...
Hickory smoked if he gets to the Champions League.
This is your maple bonus, motherfucker. Wow, okay.
Yeah, so we're staying in Romania. More pork, yeah. There was a player called Marius, and I'll butcher his name, but I think it's Chiaoara.
You'll butcher his name, will you? You'll butcher his name. Did he play for Eintracht Frankfurter? Ha!
No, he played for Hamburger SV.
Hey! Not technically pork, but I'll give it anyway. It's in the spirit of the joke. Okay.
Marius Chioara, a defender from again, a team called UT Arad, he accepted a bribe to throw a game.
Okay.
The bribe, 15 kilos of fine pork sausages.
15 kilos? That's not a lot. That's not
15
a lot.
15 kilos is a lot of sausages.
It's 30 pounds of sausages.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, obviously, it's redolent of Judas. But I mean, given that he was Jewish, it's probably not what he accepted. Now that I think about it. And what where was this?
This was in Romania again. I'm not sure what league it was. Yeah, it was second division in Romania. Actually, a lot seems to be happening there. They were playing against a fourth division team called Regal Haria, and the backlash was so bad that he had to go to Germany and leave the country.
Wow. So I kind of puts a bit of a shadow on our most famous victory as Irish fans in 1990 when we beat Romania in a World Cup penalty shootout.
Yes, we did.
You just think, I mean, Dave O'Leary
scores
the last penalty.
A nation holds its breath.
George Hamilton, famous commentator. And what a great phrase as well.
Oh. The nation holds its breath. Yes, we're there!
That, now, all I think was, was black pudding involved?
Well, so you think possibly that we bought the Romanian penalty shootout with a truckload of Galti?
I'm just thinking, at any point, do we have eyes on Gerry Payton? As Gerry Payton, the Irish subkeeper, is just driving an Aldi lorry just into the desert. Beep, beep. It's just the first man of sausages around here. Beep, 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 beep. Listen, two chorizos and...
and a penalty shootout.
And a penalty shootout.
Some places do actually offer, I suppose, bribes in some ways, but they're allowed to do it. So a brewery offered a lifetime supply of free beer to the first Austrian player to score in Euro 2008.
A lifetime supply?
A lifetime supply.
And who scored?
It was a guy called Ivica Vastic, and it wasn't until a couple of games in, they got their first goal. He scored a 93rd minute penalty and boom, he got himself a lifetime supply of beer.
Wow. I mean, that is a good thing or a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. I wonder how he's getting on. Let's look him up.
I'll look him up and see. I think he's probably fine, to be honest with you. That's because, to be honest with you, I've heard of lifetime supply of things before. It's disappointingly low, the amount you get.
Is it?
No, it is, because they work it out.
What,
like,
you're like Attenborough. That fucker's 98. Like,
yeah, no, it's not. Okay, I realize what you mean over the course of your life. But what they determine is a month's supply of or a year's supply of can often be quite like I've given away things on the radio, like a month's supply of X. It's like one box of whatever. So like a month's supply of crisps. It's a box of crisps. Like,
right. Well,
with like 15 packets in it. Like, it's not like you're not going to die.
But that shouldn't be up to them to determine. It should be up to you.
So whatever you think, whatever Ivica can drink, it should be an unlimited. It's up to him.
Yeah, a lifetime supply is what he decides he drinks in a lifetime.
What it takes him to lose his life, whatever that number is.
Yeah, I mean, somebody should. I mean, this should be done scientifically. Some sort of liver lobe is taken out, and this is the way I would do it. Maybe just because I want to get my money's worth. I would endure an invasive biopsy where they looked at what my liver could handle. And then once that is at hepatic capacity was calculated, I would go to fucking town, Dave, is what I would do. I'd be drinking all sorts of shit. I would just walking into bars and pointing at the top shelf going, it is my right. It is my divine right.
You sound like your man who everyone has audio of, which goes, I don't often go drinking, but when I do, I go at it awful hard.
I saw some guy on Reeling in the Ears the other day going, when I'm at the pub now, I don't want the time limit.
I'll have to drive home afterwards.
So, okay. We've asked this question similarly before, but you can't have Coke Zero. You can't have Diet Coke. What would you want a lifetime supply of? What is best? What would you make most money from or save most money if they gave you a lifetime supply?
And I can't say Coke Zero.
You can't say Coke Zero. Would it be petrol?
No, not at all. Probably double deckers.
Really?
Oh, I fucking love double deckers. I eat so many double deckers.
Not in a bus way.
No, really. I don't care about buses whatsoever. No, the nougat based crispy chocolate delight. Now I do buy the small multi packs, and there's four in that, and I would absolutely eat three at a time.
There's no way that you would. Like, okay, I'm not your doctor. Be honest. No one leaves one. There's no way you eat three and leave one.
I'll tell you why I do. I'll tell you why I do, right? Because in my car is my, I won't say secret chocolate stash. Not secret. It's very much not a secret. But my car is where I keep my chocolate bars, right? Because obviously I drive out of work every day. I eat my lunch in the car. It's my actually my biggest meal of the day is usually my lunch.
You eat your lunch in your car?
I do as I'm driving. Yeah,
what,
I like
do you
to
want a steakhouse or something? What are you doing? Well, what I do is I'm trying to get the timetable of the security guards at the double decker factory. So I sit outside with a flask of tea, listen to the baseball scores.
1,000, 2,000, 3,000.
You've got 2 minutes once we cut the main feed of the video cameras to get as much pork and double deckers as you can imagine. Leave the celery. We're not going there. What are we, Chelsea fans? Okay, so you eat in your car.
So I would have, let's like say, I'm not, this is not an exaggeration.
You can't see his children anymore. Yeah. I pull up to the playground, and in the rain, I eat my sandwich in the car.
While I watch them through the wipers. Each wiper swoosh, wiping the tears from my eyes.
Yes.
No, so I would have maybe, like, this is not a joke, 5 or 6 multi-packs in the, now, this is very important, in the rear passenger footwell.
I know why this is, because you can't reach back without.
Exactly. I can reach back at lights when the car is stopping traffic. I can reach back safely and grab a multi-pack from the passengers. I obviously can't reach behind myself in the driver's footwell. Okay. So that's where it goes. So if I have 5 or 6, you know, multi-packs, then I go for the, I go, look, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Okay. I do 2 and then I go, will I? And I go, I will. Yeah. And I'll do the 3rd.
Okay. Okay.
And usually I'm finished that as I pull into the driveway.
Right.
Where I'm allowed to see my children.
This is only funny because it's so exaggerated. I mean, if you were close to that, this would be really tragic.
It would be tragic. It would be cruel. It would actually be cruel.
I don't know a man who has a better familial relationship than this man. Wow. Okay.
Okay. But I want to wrap this up before we get to part 2 and the brilliant Paul Watson with a bit of a sad story.
Okay.
First of all, have you ever followed the HFS Loans League?
I followed it. Once you play in something that big, you always check in every so often. You're talking to the top goal scorer.
I didn't realise. Did you play for Congleton in the HFS?
I did. I started off with Congleton before I moved to that other team you were about to mention.
No, I'm not. Congleton's the only one I know.
Okay.
Okay, so in the as you can imagine, this is a very, very low level of football. Okay.
Where is it?
It is in England.
Okay.
HFS Loans is a company that sponsored a league, lower league football, but it was still organized football with league tables and all that. And Congleton were a team.
Okay.
And they played in 1993.
Congleton,
yeah.
Did they all play like just behind each other in a 1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1 formation? Is that how they play it? I think we should get it out wide against these lads, to be honest with you. They're very compact down the middle, but...
Congleton. They were a big enough team to have fans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, they had fans. Mm-hmm. They had a PR department. They had a fanzine. They had programs at the games. They had a small little stadium. Mm-hmm. And they had a fan. They actually ran a competition to find their oldest fan.
Right.
And they found this fella and he came to the games. And then, sadly, for a couple of weeks, a couple of months, he didn't go to the games.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So, they came to the obvious conclusion that the gentleman had passed away with their oldest fan. So they decided before the next match, it was one of the evenings, after work, because that's the kind of scenario that you're playing this HFS Loans League, that they would hold a minute's silence. And the referee, they had a PA, and the guy said,
"We're going to hold a minute's silence now for Jack, of course, who was the club's oldest fan at the age of 93. He sadly passed away." And the referee blew his whistle,
and they all held their silence. It was a bit of a kerfuffle as a man had arrived late to the game and was making his way down to his favourite seat, and everyone turned to find out that it was Jack, who was allegedly dead, who had just been in Skegness on his holidays for about 3 weeks. He came back and interrupted his own minute silence.
And the shock of hearing that he died, it took a tragic turn. Jack perspired on the spot. No, expired. He sweated on the spot. It wasn't a big deal at all, to be honest.
He was fine. He enjoyed the rest of the game. God,
he sweated for a bit. I'm just wondering if you saw your own funeral. Would you like to see your own funeral?
I'd love to see people crying at the fact that I'm not there and saying nice things about me, because God knows they don't do it in real life.
I'll be there.
You won't outlive me.
Oh, of course I'll outlive you.
You won't. My diet is Coke Zero, tiramisu and double deckers. You've no chance of outliving me. I cover all the major vitamins and minerals.
Yeah, but they're taking my liver out so I can get free stuff, Dave. I think my attitude to danger is probably worse than yours. No, I think, I'd imagine we'll probably go, we'll die together hand in hand.
We will. I'll let you go off the door on which we are floating in the frozen Atlantic. And yeah. I'll say, but I won't do it. I'll do it with a heavy heart. But, you know, I will say, Neil, are you there? No. And then this rescue will come.
I think I will outlive you. And I think I will be the one to organize the shots over your coffin the way you always wanted. Do you know that?
The coffin filled with tiramisu, if you don't remember.
Tiramisu, yeah. Soaked in brandy, that man would be.
Anyway, let's leave the football stories there for now, because in a minute we'll have the ultimate football story. You're going to meet Paul Watson, a man who wants to organize the world's worst football tournament, and tell you why it would be absolutely brilliant.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to part two of Why Would You Tell Me That? And we're joined now by author and journalist, Mr. Paul Watson. Paul, I billed you to Neil in the first part of this episode, and forgive me for this, but just go with me. I think you'll understand where I'm going with. As the man who wants to organize the world's worst football tournament, but we all will really want to make sure it happens. Is that cool?
That's a cool way of putting it, yeah.
Because it isn't, I don't mean the world's worst football tournament as in a badly organized, terrible tournament. I simply mean that you want to put on a tournament that focuses on teams that don't traditionally have the chance to play in tournaments. Would that be correct?
Yeah, it's exactly that. And I mean, if you don't want to watch American Samoa versus Djibouti, then frankly, I don't know who you are.
Finally, the Djibouti content that this podcast has always been waiting for.
Well, look, let's go back to the start, Paul. And I realize you have told this story, I'm sure, many times. But look, in doing my research for this, you know, I don't just want to jump in and go, you know, this guy, English guy called Paul, and he wants to organize a tournament for the lowest ranked or perhaps even not affiliated countries in the world. Let's go back to where this all began. So if we can retrace our steps back to the point where you found yourself, I suppose, the realization dawned on you that you weren't going to be a professional footballer.
Yeah, and you're probably imagining it dawns at sort of the age of 12, maybe even earlier, 8. Yeah. No, this was 25. I was fully 25. And let's be honest, I wasn't even playing at any level. I basically had this thing I'd do where I'd show up to preseason training at sort of low semi-pro level football teams in London. And back in those days, it wasn't the thing that now it's very fashionable. Like everyone gets footballs out from the start. There's lots of like technical drills.
I coach kids. Everything is ball at the feet, ball at the feet. Spain now. Yeah, it's all ticky-tacky. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Back in those days, you didn't see a football for 2 weeks in preseason training. You ran and you ran and you ran and you threw up and you ran and you ran. So my thing was, I got myself into shape where I had to always be the fittest player on every single team.
Oh, clever.
So for about 2 weeks, I would look amazing. And the coaches would be watching me thinking, I can see this guy at right wing. I can see him being like the star of the season.
He's up and down.
Engine.
I was the engine. And then the footballs would come out and very quickly I'd get the tap on the shoulder. It'd be like, I don't think you're going to fit in here. You're gone. Honestly, within about a week of a football being introduced, it was like, you know what? Actually, I think we've maybe got the position covered. So this was my life. Like I wasn't terrible at football. I wasn't like comically bad, but I was clearly never, ever going to make it, let alone play for England, which was obviously, you know, even in those days, we're going back to a period where it was quite a bleak period for English football, 2008. But even then, I think the call was unlikely.
Right.
We called that the glory years in Ireland. I don't know if you know that.
Fair play.
Around 92 when you didn't qualify, and then when Iceland knocked you out. I mean, for those, I mean, they're the twin peaks of Irish achievement.
No, okay. I totally respect that.
This realization dawns on you, but I gather that, you know, you also don't want to give up the dream of being involved in football.
Well, yeah, and furthermore, I've got a flatmate who's as much of a kind of idiot as I am. So we basically stayed in this kind of like denial state for as long as we could. And what we said was, look, we can't play for England because we're not good enough. But what if we could naturalize and play for like a country that's really, really bad? You know, it's a conversation a lot of people had in the pub. You know, you watch England playing Andorra, San Marino, and you know, it's like, oh, I could be playing for them. They're that bad.
Because you hear that commentary, don't you? Like, you know, the commentary is, you know, this guy's a fireman and this guy's a carpenter. You're like, well, I work in telesales, so I can surely be as good as him.
Right. And it lulls you into this sense of like, yeah, they do. But the reality is they're also really, really good footballers. And this became clear. So we would go down the rankings and look for teams and say, look, could we get in there? And the only way we could really do this was going down Wikipedia, the trusted route, and looking in the squad lists and seeing what teams they played for. But what started to get to us was, you know, we knew San Marino Andorra is impossible because however deluded we were, no team we ever played in would only lose 6 or 7 nil to, like, let's be honest with you, that's not the level we're at. So we would go all the way down. And at the very bottom, we were finding like Bhutan and Montserrat. And we're thinking, oh, here's a chance. And so Montserrat, at the time, this is very different now, at the time, barely had a team together. You know, they were bottom of the rankings. But even in there, they had Rule Fox. Now, you'll remember Rule Fox.
Yeah.
Rule Fox. And he had probably retired by that point, but Wikipedia hadn't clocked that.
Sure.
But we just went down to Montserrat, worst team, looked at them, Rule Fox. And we just looked at each other and said, no training session with Rule Fox in it. We're not going to survive. We are going to be found out very fast. So it was then that we found that non-FIFA football exists and that there's another whole list of teams that we never knew about that are places or peoples or states that are not recognised by FIFA. And that was this moment where we
And that
were like,
face that Neil just made is the face I made when I first heard that. I actually didn't realise that there weren't teams, you know, that there were teams that weren't associated with FIFA, you know, and particularly teams and countries and places and peoples who might have an idea to play football and enjoy football, but they're just not part of FIFA.
So why are they not part of FIFA? Are they just, did they never apply or did they fail criteria or why are they not part of it?
It's mixed. So some of them have just never applied. That actually is where I ended up, is a place that just never applied. Some of them it's politically contentious. So there's teams like Tibet, for example, you know, Tibet comes into FIFA or tries to come into FIFA. Well, China's going to head the other way. Yeah. And then I think we know who wins that battle. So there's a real mixture. And what we were looking for was the worst of the worst. So we went down this list. There were rankings of the non-FIFA. The very bottom, we find Yap, an island called Yap, Y-A-P, where they use
stones as currency.
Stone money. They do indeed. Although only, disappointingly, only like big ceremonial transactions they use the stones. It's not like you go and buy a Kit Kat and you get to wheel your stone.
I was jumping ahead to go, I can see why they didn't join FIFA, because the referee couldn't toss the coin at the start of a match to figure out which end was which
end. And also all the bribes were just quarries. You know, it was just like an entire, here you go.
Also, G-strings, you know, at a striptease club, I mean, that is quite difficult.
Just pouring aggregate out of a bucket.
Somebody's walking away with just with loose chippings. Like somebody in The Great Escape trying to get rid of the soil from the tunnel they've dug. Have we taken this too far? We
have. Yeah, probably. But that's what we usually do.
You ended up in Yap.
Well, no, because... So we saw Yap.
Okay.
And the first thing we noticed was their coach was called Martin Shaw. And we thought, okay, interesting. Had a click through link. So I was like, wow, they must have had a coach with some prestige. No, it was the link for Judge John Deed. You remember that TV show? Martin Shaw. And I thought, shit, Martin Shaw? The man of many talents? No, wrong Martin Shaw. Right. So that was... But what we also saw was they had won a game. They'd beaten Pompey, P-O-H-M-P-E-I, their neighbours, on penalties. So they technically were not the worst.
Pompey were the worst.
And that, according to Wikipedia, was the worst team in the world. They never won a game. Tiny Micronesian island. And so we sent them an email. And then we could just rest and be like, we did it.
We've asked the question. Bit. Yeah.
What we didn't expect was we got a message back pretty fast. and we've been very cagey. We were just saying we'd love to know more about football on your island. We don't want to scare them. We're like, we'd love to know more about football on your island. The message we got back, honestly, we thought the piss was being taken out of us by someone, because got a message back saying, I'd love to help you. Really, thank you for the interest. I'd love to help you, but I've just moved to London, so I'm probably of no use to you. And we're like, oh, what? We're in London. There's no chance this isn't one of our mates.
Yeah, the guy answering the emails from the Pompey FA is all of a sudden in London.
So we arranged to meet this guy, and there was this moment where we were both expecting to be stood up by the other one. And we met this guy, Charles Musana. Turns out he was Ugandan, but he'd lived in Pompey for a decade, tried to get everyone playing football. And he's there in his first week in London, having come from a beautiful tropical island. So we just stood to meet him and looked for the coldest man we could find. He looked at us, we looked at him. We went into a curry house together and he said, honestly, I thought this was a prank. And we said, yeah, so do we. Real guy. And yeah, from there, he said, look, he basically sized us up and was like, look, lads, you know, in a very Ugandan rather than a British way, it was like, look, lads, I see what you're doing. But honestly, it's really upsetting to me that football's going to go to rack and ruin because, you know, I've left and no one's really doing anything now. Why don't you go and coach these guys? Like, go and help them. And we were just there kind of thinking, yeah.
Because, see, again, you mentioned before about how people might have these kinds of conversations in a pub over a pint.
Yeah, people don't do it.
They don't get to the point where they're meeting the Ugandan who runs the FA of a Polynesian or a Micronesian island in a curry house and going, yeah, whatever you say, we're going to do.
Yeah, that bit, I look back and I'm like, yeah, I think. But the other thing is, in a movie, right, you would cut from that scene and we'd be on the island.
Of course.
In reality, it costs about $2,000 to get there. So I had to save up for a year, a full year of saving and scrimping. And in that year, I must have thought about 150 times, what am I doing here? This isn't, I had to tell my friends and family what I was doing. Like literally everyone I told, my brain was saying, yeah, but this is ridiculous. What are you doing? you won't believe it. My biggest worry. So I did get there and got to the point where I could afford it. My biggest worry of all was I was going to get there and find there was like a proper coach. Because I was trying to learn how to be a coach
in a year.
And I was like, what if I get there? And I don't know who it was I had visions of in those days, but like, what if you get there and Roy Hodgson's there?
Yeah. He's coached everywhere and he never gets the credit, Paul. He never gets the credit.
He's tying four lads together as a really tight back four. Yeah, I can see that. So when you were doing this, right, what sort of coaching credentials did you have?
Zero. So I had nothing, but I basically spent all this time from that point on, I spent all my time still training with clubs. I was at this point, I was training with an amateur team. I'd given up on the proper clubs, but they were a good amateur team.
Yeah.
And we had an Italian coach who used to play for Cagliari. So he was a properly good coach. Jesus. And I'd be trying to learn everything from him. And like studying how to be a coach from zero. One thing I didn't learn from him was he was our coach. And one game he specifically spent most of our team talk saying about how we had to be calm because we were playing our rivals. He's like, look, guys, had enough of this shit. I've played in big games. I know how to be calm. I need you guys to be calm. Got sent off for headbutting someone. He was a player manager. Got sent off for headbutting someone after 8 minutes. We spent 82 minutes with 10 men with him on the sidelines looking askance at us. Sort of, he couldn't even look at us.
Okay, so do you then, after a year and saving your money, end up on the island of Pompeii?
I do. I absolutely do. And initially, go all the way to the island. Now, this is where it starts to sound like we'd be scammed as well. We took, so it's me and my mate, and we took Charles Musana back with us. We all funded his flight too.
Oh,
so
that okay.
didn't help. But we needed him there to sort of introduce us to all the people, and it kind of made sense. Get there, and he's rung around all the football people. He's like, it's big news you guys are coming. Like, this is a big thing. And I'm shitting it because I'm like, I've never run a football coaching session. And I've got, on the flight over there, I'm literally sat with Inverting the Pyramid by Jonathan Wilson, the tack on my bench, me with a notebook full of drills I've drilled in. And I'm like, what does that mean? And I'm trying to plan this session.
That is Ted Lasso's scene. That is exactly the scene. Basically,
I am Ted Lasso.
He's reading the same book.
I am Ted Lasso. 10 years earlier. And yeah, so we flew for, it takes 25 hours to fly there pretty much. We get there, we are feeling dreadful. Straight off the plane, and because of the time zone, he's like, yeah, it's training now, like this
okay
is the time,
now basically. Wow,
so we go straight from the airport
wow
to the field, and I'm in pieces. I don't know where I am, but in my head I'm like trying to plan this perfect session, and he's saying, yeah, you know, it might be a lot of people, and I'm like, what do I do if there's 50? What do I do if there's 100? What do I do if there's like 300 people? You get there, there's one guy.
Yeah. Now you're what we call a utility player, right?
It's like, look, how many positions can you play in?
Sweeper, yeah. Keeper, midfielder, striker. Yeah. Though there are other things on the pitch, though, because it turns out there's a couple of things you didn't know about Pompeii. A, the weather, and B, the natural wildlife, right?
Yeah, I mean, I did know it, but I was cocky. And I was told it's the wettest place, like third wettest place on Earth. And I'm like, yeah, but I mean,
but how wet can it be? It's tropical
rain.
Island.
It's rain. I mean, yeah. What, how bad can rain? Yeah, so it rains like it's the end of the world every day, most of the time there. And so the field is completely flooded. It's like ankle deep water. You try and do the bounce the ball test. It does not bounce.
Right.
But then toads start hopping through because it is a toad habitat they play on.
It's a toad habitat. Of course it is.
Yeah.
So you remember there's that goal, and I think it might have been the Sunderland game where the ball hits a beach ball and goes into the goal. It's like I can't remember.
I think it was Liverpool Sunderland.
It was Liverpool Sunderland. It was a red balloon, and it was the greatest day ever because Liverpool were crying. And as a United fan, I was absolutely delighted.
There you go. Well, imagine that, but with toads.
Don't give Bielsa any ideas. I mean, that's the next thing. His level of research has now gotten to amphibious level. He's training toads. He's not only spying on people, but now he's at this level. So there's loads of toads just on the pitch, and it's ankle deep water.
Yep, pretty much. And to be fair, wow. This was something I came to learn from hard, hard experience. Everyone is always late there. They're on island time. Everyone is always late. So you name a time, you can expect people to start turning up an hour later. So, all right, actually, one player at the time we allocated, an hour later, we had a full 12. We'd gone 9,000 miles and we'd had a decent game of six aside.
Right.
and I'm thinking, yeah, but I have spent my entire savings.
Is
all my money. Like, yeah. I'm not one of these people who, you know, I've secretly got a few grand stashed away. No, literally, this was all my money. I had about £35 left in my bank account and an overdraft of £2,000 that I was like, this will be my stopgap. And I'm stood there and I'm thinking, we've just made the most expensive five-a-side game in history. It's like, why didn't I just join a power league?
Yeah. but you must tell Neil and all our audience how much you were being paid to be the coaches of the national side of Pompeii? Because I think this is what makes it all worthwhile.
Zero. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Absolute zero.
Absolutely. And never had any never had any aspirations it would be any different. Like, partly because I knew I was a fraud. I had no qualifications. You can't really just turn up on a tiny island thousands of miles away and expect to be paid to do a job that nobody wants to do.
When you flew back to the UK, surely they thought you were drug smuggling or something? Because that just doesn't make any sense. No, I just flew to an island that doesn't have a football team and trained 12 lads in toads with a pissing down rain. And I went there for a very short space of time. I swear to God, I'm not smuggling shit back into the country. I swear to God, there isn't 17 turtles strapped to my undershirt.
I'm 80% frog spawn.
I am snorting frog spawn off a lily pad like I've invented a new hallucinogen. How long were you on the island and what did you do for money then?
So, like, first trip was only 3.5 weeks because it was designed to be like, look, is this worth doing?
Yeah.
The reality is, it kind of was, because there were enough players that I was like, well, you could build a team here, right? Like, but more than that, I had totally burnt all the bridges the other side. Like, I was like, I've spent all my money. I've quit my job. Like, I can't now just go home and be like, yeah, it didn't work out.
Didn't work out, yeah. You've got to commit now.
So I went back and I had to borrow money to go back. And I repeatedly borrowed money from pretty much everyone. And I liken it to kind of like a gambling situation. The problem was, if I stopped, I'm just an idiot who's wasted thousands of pounds on going to this like frog infested island. If I get to a point where like, actually, you've coached a national team or, you know, you've if I could get something that I can show for it, then
yeah.
Then it's worth it. But the problem was, yeah, like I basically had to just keep going at this project again and again and again. It drove me into greater and greater levels of debt. But we did start to get some interest and like people were beginning to play. We created the Pompeii Premier League, no less.
Okay, so hang on. So this is fast forwarding a lot and I love this, but we have to just drill down for a second. So you get there, you start to form a team. Like, Neil, you might remember in one of the episodes, we talked about the island nation of Nauru.
Yeah.
And we talked about that and the exploitation of the natural resources on that island. The fact that the wealth came flooding in and then left very quickly as soon as the natural resources were all depleted. And that Nauru had the highest rate of obesity in the world. Considering that Pompeii is... I mean, I won't say neighbor. I mean, it's obviously a huge...
Oh, it's very close.
Yeah, it is very close, yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, are you dealing with a population who are athletic? Are you dealing with a population who play sports? Is it natural that, there's loads of guys who play this rugby or this sport, and then they'll just transfer their skills?
Yeah, similar to Nauru. So it's like obesity rate is really high across the population, but young kids are generally pretty athletic. It's that later on in life, there's nothing to really do with that, and then the diet's a problem... And that's kind of when it goes wrong. So yeah, like the kids were in incredible shape. Some of them, the main sports they played, baseball, basketball.
American sports were big.
An American protectorate. So America pays it loads of money. That's its main income. And this is a problem too. So culture dependence, because what the money in Micronesia mostly is from is the US saying, if we want to put troops in here, we can do it because it's a strategic bolt hole near Hawaii, relatively near Hawaii and Guam. So they get paid to do nothing. And that culture permeates through the whole society that the main thing is just handouts being given to you. So it's not like everyone was fat. There's this vision of like, oh, everyone's really fat. No, it's like at a certain age, people do begin to get a bit obese. But actually the kids we were working with, they were insane.
So you go then and actually end up getting enough players to form the Pompeii Premier League.
Right. So me and, the funniest thing in a way is when I went back, one of the reasons I was like, look, I am going to see this through is because I got a message saying, there's a kid on the island, sensational footballer, like originally from Sri Lanka, but lived in Pompeii 10 years. And I'm like, why didn't he come to training? They're like, oh, he was off the island when you were there. I was like, right. There's one like player and we've gone the length of the world and he happens to be away. But yeah, this guy Dilshan was like incredible footballer. And just said, look, come back, mate. We will do this together. And I did. I got back. We went for a drink and we dreamt up the Pompeii Premier League, which was basically us going into different parts of the island, different communities, like there's a lot of church groups, missionary groups, and then there's like the college group, and then there's the old guard of players who used to play in the really old days and gave up. So we go to these community groups, be like, we want to set up a league, bring a team. And I'm not saying we got desperate, but we did cold call the Mormons. We went to the, there's loads of Mormons. The whole place is teamed with Mormons. So we went to the Mormon hut.
You Jehovah's Witness door. The Mormons.
Like literally knocked on their door. Guy opens the door in his underwear. Basically, he's like, how can I help you? And I was like,
have you read the good book? And it's like a Panini sticker album from Italian 90.
That's inverting the pyramid again. That's what it is.
This is what I said to him. I said to him, have you considered playing football? And he genuinely said something like, have you let the light of the Lord into your life? And I was like, this is a 0-0 draw.
Okay, so how long then do you spend on Pompeii in total?
2 years, pretty much, but in blocks. So I would come home and, you know, mostly. Maybe
sign on.
Sign on. Are you actively looking for work?
Yeah. I mean, it's a long story, but...
Like, how far is it from sort of Palikir? Is it more up in Madlenium or is it... sorry? so I would come back, but also had to load up on kicks. We had nothing. We had no footballs. We had no boots. Nothing, and everything rotted so fast because it was wet. So I had to keep coming back, loading up the kit at my own expense, going back over. And again, I must have looked mental, like bringing these bags across the world in all these airports with like loaded down with bags of football kit. And this project took so long. We got the league going. People did come and we taught. It was quite a unique league because we taught people the rules almost as we went along initially.
Okay.
And then gradually as the games went on, the local players would start to referee the matches. And it was amazing because whatever culture in the world you're in, the same thing will happen if people start to referee matches. The piss was ripped out of the referee. So it was all in Pompeii. So they have their own language, Pompeian, and they also speak English. Like they're all pretty much fluent in English. But they chose to use Pompeian when ripping into me or when talking to each other and they didn't want me to know. So as soon as you get the local officials refereeing, they would be there trying to do their best, like really earnest, and then they'd make a decision that you just hear shrieks and hoots and comments and everyone falling about laughing. And sure enough, I was like, yeah, those are the words they used to say when I was a coach.
Yeah, I've heard those before. Pompeian then, for should have gone to Specsavers. Yeah, right. I know.
Like, honestly.
Did you end up getting to coach the national team and did you play a game?
So yes and no. So what we did was we couldn't be a national team in full because a national team in Micronesia would mean Pompeii, but also the four islands that make up Micronesia. Pompeii is just one of them.
Gotcha.
And that is why when we first started out looking for a nation, they weren't in the official, well, one of the reasons they're not in the FIFA rankings is because Pompeii's not a nation. It has to be Micronesia, the Federated States, which would mean uniting four islands that are separated by, you know, two of them are separated by a couple of thousand miles, but also the airfares between them are about £1,000 a time. So like they would have to unite all four islands, which actually they since have done. But we couldn't do that. So we took a Pompeii team to Guam, and this was a vengeance mission because their last game that they had played, which had actually stopped people playing, was a 16-1 defeat to Guam.
16-1. Wow.
And so when we started training, we were like, look, we're going to Guam. We're going to go to Guam. And all the players, it was as if I was going, yep, we're going to Old Trafford and we're going to get a result. The players were looking at me like, Guam, man, this is Guam. Yeah, this is Guam. And it's a byword for like, I don't know, byword for like, it was like Vegas to them because Guam is like a Vegas-y kind of like, it's glitzy and it's strip clubs and it's like everything that Pompeii isn't in that way. But in sports terms, going to Guam is like a, it's like a byword for getting your ass handed to you. It's like, we're going to Guam, man. Yeah. Right. And I was there going, no, we're going to win. We're going to win. Because I had to build belief in them. But in those days, you couldn't watch a football match from Guam. Like, this was back before where we are now. Right now, we could probably stream the Guam Premier League right now if I wanted to. But then, we had no clue. So I was saying to them, I'll definitely compete this lot. And I'm thinking, are we just going to lose 16-1 again?
Yeah. So what happened?
Well, we arranged to play three Guam club teams initially because we thought, like, that's a safer bet. And then their national under-18 team. First game, we lost 3-2. and we should
not
have won
bad
that game.
Okay.
Oh, we should have won that game. And literally, like, the players were in tears in the dressing room. I've never seen anything like grown men in tears. Like, they could not get over the fact they should have won this game. And so we kind of got them pumped up for the second game. We were proper, like, the way that I managed this game was I played on this misery that they'd had, but like coming all the way to lose 3-2. I was like, do you want that to happen to you again? Do you want to go back with defeat? And I gave them this stirring, like, we pumped them into a frenzy before this game against a team called Rovers. They were like bashing on the wall. Like, this is not a very Pompeian thing. They're very, like, it's quite a placid culture. Everyone's in a mild manner. They were hammering on the walls, chanting. They marched onto the pitch to play Rovers in the second game. Rovers is like, they are, they're a Guam club team, but a Guam club team that looked kind of like a Sunday league team in England. Like, they just looked like a group of guys who have been told, do you fancy coming for a kick around? And they're like, yeah, fine.
Sure,
and they
hear
this pounding on the walls. Out walk our boys. And then you could see from the lineup, they're like, what the hell is this? And yeah, we absolutely battered them. We were 6-0 up after 80 minutes. And we let one in, and they scored from about 18 yards, and it was like a really good shot. And our goalkeeper went, good shot, man. And all his teammates turned around and went, shut up. Shut up now. And I'm there on the bench thinking, if we lose this now, this is it. This is it. Not just for them. This is it for me. Like, I'm giving this spot up. So I'm on there for 10 minutes. I'm on the sideline. Every single kick of the ball, I'm like yelling and like, clear it. And it's like, there's no threat. We're playing a team that are 5 goals down who are basically thought they were coming out for a nice friendly kick around. And yeah, we won. And like, literally, there were pylons, people dumping the bucket of Kool-Aid over me. It was like the end of a high school sport. There were like a group of Pompeians who had come, because there's quite a lot of Pompeians in Guam. And they were running around with flags. And there's like, players, our hardest player, our captain Denson, who is like the hardest man in the world, do not mess with Denson, is there just fully in tears. And the Rovers players just look like they've interrupted a wedding or something.
Yeah, like, they don't get guys, why is this important?
They're just like, thanks, guys. They sort of like just walked off and just left us to our life. But for us, it was like, honestly, it was like we won a cup final. It was just like, after the relief that we could go home and say we'd won a game was just like,
amazing.
All enveloping.
You've totally been talking to us for half an hour. I couldn't wait to hear the results of that. I was so invested in that. I was like, oh my God, I hope they overcome their Guam thing. Oh, all know how intrinsic Guam is to the... That was fantastic.
I know we're going to get you back on another episode, because we haven't even touched Mongolia yet, Neil, which is an entirely different football story.
I didn't know any of this stuff. I heard Paul say on Football Weekly that he had been on a reality show in Mongolia. I just went, no. I didn't realise that this is the Paul we're talking to.
You mean you haven't?
You haven't watched it?
No.
It's such a good story that I do think we're going to have to save it for another episode, Paul, because we've been talking, as Neil said, for half an hour.
Oh my God.
Let's get to the point now where you want all of the nations of Micronesia and all of the nations at the lower ends of football, you'd love them to come together and have a tournament, right?
Well, it's funny. It's one of those ones where I was kind of joking when I pitched it. So I think that the lower ranked nations in FIFA get a bad deal, because some of them barely ever get any matches at all, because their World Cup qualification campaigns in places like, in a lot of Asia, your World Cup qualification campaign is 1 2-legged match and you're out. That's 4 years. So, for example, Mongolia, they lost to Afghanistan, 2-legged match. They lost it and that's it. That's 4 years gone.
Yeah.
You are not playing in a World Cup. I think that's brutal. So I basically, somewhat jokingly, pitched the idea of a bottom 32 World Cup. So the 32 lowest ranked teams having a World Cup. And it would throw up some incredible games. As I say, like Central African Republic versus Vanuatu or something like that. You know, these games that you're like, this would just
the derby.
Be
yeah.
awesome. Yeah. Right? It was like, yeah, the big one, the grudge match. But, you know, like all these games. And so I pitched it somewhat jokingly. And then Twitter went mad for it. Like it got more traction than anything I've ever done, pretty much. But the funniest thing for me was I was getting messages as if I had actually had it in my power to organize it.
Yes.
So people were sending me things saying, right, when you do the 32 World Cup, we shouldn't do the seeding system this way. And I'm like, dude. And they're like, so which teams have you got so far? Well, none. I mean, like, I'm just a guy with a Twitter account. Like,
who made a suggestion?
Well, the people go, is it Paul Watts? Is it the Paul Watts? Oh, it's Pompeii Paul Watts. Well, then I'm kind of interested in it.
Yeah, I don't know what people thought I was going to do about it, but I started to hear from people that, yeah, like, they're like, we're in. Like, I started to get nations approach me and be like, look, we might be in for this.
That is so good.
Wow. But only a few. And I think a few of them probably would say no way. But I did have a few nations contact me and be like, is this a real thing?
And what about then that neck of the woods where there's Polynesia, Melanesia, Micronesia? I mean, could there even be a tournament, a Nesian tournament, where, you know, these these teams that don't, you know, like, you know, I mean, we've heard of Vanuatu and Nauru, and obviously we know some of the Polynesian nations. But I mean, could you get a tournament going down there?
It'd be so expensive. It's so expensive. Everything is. That's the problem. So a lot of these nations, there's just no way of funding anything.
And
that's the real sadness of it for me is, like, you could have the most amazing tournament in that part of the world for people who have just never even had a chance to play a game. But yeah, who's going to fund it?
Who's going to fund it? Yeah.
I keep thinking, what if there was like a, just like a kind of quirky sponsor that were like, this would be a really fun way. Like, say you had a brand.
Paddy Power?
Well, I've got some track record with Paddy Power and organising World Cups.
Will you tell everybody, tell Neil? Yeah, no, because we do have time for this story. So go on, Paul. Tell everyone
All
this.
Right, so 2018, there was going to be a World Cup for non-FIFA recognised countries, as we've spoken about. But people like Tibet and all this lot. But they couldn't find a sponsor at all. The organisation running it had no one who wanted to offend everyone by sponsoring because you're going to offend China. So I was talking to them. I was like, look, can I help? And they're like, yeah, but no one's going to sponsor this. I thought, well, who sponsors stuff that nobody wants? Who's not afraid of offending us? So I had a mate at Paddy Power, and I introduced the idea to him as you would over drinks. And he was just like, I think this is really good, but put this in an actual email. Like, do this properly. And I did. And he took it to people, and they were like, okay, we quite like this. And it progressed and progressed. And then the Paddy Power said, yeah, like, we'll sponsor a World Cup of these nations in London in 2018. It ran just before the FIFA World Cup.
FIFA World Cup,
in Russia. And but because I'd brought in the sponsor, I was left holding the bag in that I was in charge of the whole thing, pretty much. There were like five of us, all volunteers, running this tournament. And it was mental because we were bringing nations in where, like, there were visa problems. I got death threats. I had official embassy warning letters.
Yeah, but hang on. Who did you get a death threat from?
I got various death threats, but the best death threat I got was from a 90-year-old Georgian woman who then turned. Well, actually, she wasn't 90; she was about 80. She turned up to one of the games and said, "It was I sent you that message," and I was like, "What? The one where you said you're going to kill me?" And she's like, "No, I just said you really shouldn't have this tournament because Abkhazia's in it and Abkhazia is Georgia, so what you're saying is terrible." I was like, yeah, you did also say
you were going to kill me.
But it was all, and then she was like, but, you know, can I come in and watch the game? I was like, Jesus Christ. So yeah, she came in and watched the game.
Please tell me, this is the first I've heard of this, but please tell me you used the strap line, Paddy Power, our raison d'etre is Tibet.
Surely,
that is genius.
I don't even know if they did anything with Tibet. They did a lot of stuff, but they did that. I mean, it was mad.
It's fun to bet. I like to bet, but when it goes too far,
a free Tibet. You get a free Tibet with every £5,000.
Free Tibet.
The reason you haven't done this is because you haven't had Don Draper here. Listen, take my details, Dave. We're pushing you out.
Fair. But actually, again, very quickly, if you can, Paul, tell the story of the gate receipts and trying to get them out. First of all, out of a bag, into a bank, and then out of the country.
Yeah, this was a thing. So we had all the money we were taking, like it would be, was in cash. It was in cold, hard, nasty cash. It was in fivers and £1 because the games were like £6 entry. It was like, it was proper old school non-league money. And we had it in, after each person came back, so it was about four of us, we'd go to a ground for the day, we'd run the games, we'd take the cash, we'd come home and we'd stack our float of money on our like hostel. We were staying in a hostel on our hostel table until there were just stacks and stacks of cash, cold hard cash. And then we put it into a suitcase in the end. That was our concession. So we had a suitcase full of £36,000 in just cash. And at the end, I go up to the guy who's in charge of the organization that you know, that running it. And I'm like, so how are we banking this then? And he's like, oh, it's okay. There's a bank. There's a Swedish bank we've got an account with. You just got to take it to this address. Phone up the address just to check. And they're like, no, this is just offices. Like, it's like, you can't come in here with cash. Like, this is just literally like a admin office. There's no branch in the UK. So I go back to him. I'm like, this is not good. Like, where are we putting this cash? He's like, well, the thing is, I'm flying out tomorrow. I'm flying back home. And in fact, so is all the team. Like, all the European guys, we're just flying home. So can you put it in your bank account and then transfer it to us? And like an idiot, he gives me a letter, which is literally like an A4 piece of paper with the logo of an organization no one's heard of, which is their organization. And just basically saying, this is all fine. Don't worry about it. The money is coming to this charity, and a signature on it. I walk in, I phone up HSBC in Edgware, and I'm like, I'm coming in with a lot of cash. This is going to be all right, right? Can you make it a bit private? And they're like, yeah, yeah. No problem. Like, we do this a lot. I walk in, I go up to the like, there's a woman circling and there's quite a few people in the bank. So I go to her and like, I've got this briefcase full of cash. And I'm like, I'm here with the cash. I phoned up earlier. And she's like, how much cash? I'm like, 36,000. She goes, 36,000? And the whole branch turns and looks at me. So I get shepherded into her office with the manager, the bank manager. And he just looks at me and goes, I should call the police. Like, are you a mule?
Yeah, you just rock up with all this money, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, this is the exact profile of money laundering mules. Like, you have, I even said it in a really sweet way. He's like, with the greatest respect to you, you have almost no funds in your actual account. And I was like, yes, I have.
I've spent the last few years in Mongolia and Pompeii. Of course, I have no money.
But by this point, I'd chipped away at that. I had at least £600 in my bank. And I was like, I looked at him. I was like, okay, I take your point. And he's like, so has someone told you to do this and promised you they will pay you something? I'm like, no, honestly, it's legit. There's been a tournament in London. I must sound like a nutter. I'm like, you know, we had Carp Italia and Matta Baililand, and this guy's just looking at me like, he's like, look, I'm going to do you a favor. I should phone the police and notify them of this. And I'm like, no, I don't think we'll do that. He's like, no, we won't do that. What we'll do is you'll leave. I'll say I've not seen you. But what I would strongly advise is never go into a bank with that huge sums of cash. And he said, at the end, he's like, and also, not in a briefcase. I was like, well, how else do you want me to carry 36 grand in £5 notes?
I'd say he probably thought this guy, it's so outlandish that it's so unprofessional that it couldn't actually, it must be real.
It must be true.
No one is this bad a criminal. Nobody.
No, exactly right. It was like I was a mastermind. So yeah, then I have to walk out into the branch full of people who know I've got 36K in this bag and call an Uber.
Yeah. I say that, wait, how far away is the Uber? 5 minutes? Yeah. No! Yeah.
But literally, I'm in this mindset where the Uber does arrive and I get in it with this bag on my lap and he's like, wouldn't it be a bit more convenient to put it in the boot? And I'm like, no.
No.
Why would I do that? Convenient for who?
does anybody think that Paul is essentially a career criminal? And all, like, his next thing will be, I want to organise a tournament for all the tax shelters of the world. I mean, I think that the Caymans doesn't play Jersey often enough. And I'd like to be the person who goes between those places.
If I am the world's worst at it, because you only have to get a look at my bank balance. You'd be like, how are you failing?
Yes, what you need to do money is you need to do a crypto tournament. So Bitcoin needs to take on Ethereum. Those guys have loads of them.
Yeah.
Honestly, I
love the fact that we haven't touched on the Mongolian story, which is a whole podcast episode in itself. We haven't talked about your podcast itself, the Sweeper podcast. You haven't talked about Kitmas. There are so many things that you do that we really, really want to talk about, but we'll save them for the next episode. But for now, thank you so much for telling us all about this. It's utterly fascinating. And you've written a book about this, of course, Up Pompeii.
Yep, Up Pompeii is the book about the Micronesia adventure. Yeah, it's available now. You can buy it. You'll buy it on Amazon. I won't get any money for it.
All right.
Well, doesn't matter though.
Can you buy it through your web? Have you got a website or somewhere where you can get the money?
Nah,
if I turned up to your house with a wheelbarrow full of cash, could you give
or
me
a pocket
book?
Full of stones?
I'll take it to HSBC in Edgeware.
Do you know how we're going to do? Thanks so much, Paul. Then do you know how we're going to do? We're going to do a mini series with Paul, and what we're going to do is get his passport, flick through the pages,
and go, one at random.
Bhutan. Go. And that'll be how we'll do the themed Patreon episodes. Paul, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you guys. Really enjoyed that. Thank you.
Welcome back to part three of Why Would You Tell Me That? Neil, I told you we wouldn't have time for the Mongolia story. And
oh,
it's
my God.
So insane. But how about that? Micronesian football. I bet you never thought you'd be that interested in that.
He is 100% coming on this show again. I don't care. I don't care if we even start doing this podcast. We're going to his house and we're having the chat anyway. Brilliant. Great story. Really well told. And I can't wait to hear the rest of it. It's just
okay,
amazing
well,
stuff.
That's Paul Watson and the Tiny Nations Football Tournament. Neil Delamere, you've got the honour of hosting the last episode of season 6 of Why Would You Tell Me That? And I'm expecting something befitting of such an honour. What have you got for us next week?
Okay, well, a quick plug for Dave's radio show. Listen to on 3FM between 9 and 12, and I'm doing Vicar Street on May the 4th again. Dave, given that we do a podcast that's about trivia and interesting facts, and that you could describe, hopefully, as quite interesting, I would have thought that our Pope, our Patriarch, our Monarch, our Emperor would be somebody who could be described as the chief elf of QI.
Oh, my
BBC.
God.
I have James Harkin. Who's
you don't.
Next week. And just blow our minds with just random stuff he's thought of on the way to the podcast, probably.
Yes. Thank you, Neil Delamere.
He's going to be class.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.